Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean for Friday. First with yesterday's news, I am Glenn ZB. We're looking back at Thursday, of course. Is Queenstown the drink-driving capital of New Zealand? Amazon hits Australia. Will it hit JB Hi-Fi and Harvey Norman as well? And the process of recycling tyres. But before any of that, a little bit more on Todd Barclay. Don't worry, it won't be a whole Barclay day like it was yesterday.
The police investigation into Barclay's alleged recordings has bought him some more time. While that's going on, English can use the line that he's not prepared to comment while that investigation's taking place. He's also cited the confidentiality agreement around that deal with Glenys Dixon, the woman who received the payout. But at some stage, there will be some very uncomfortable questions. Todd Barclay told Bill English, the then Deputy Prime Minister, what he had done. He told English he had made those recordings, and that is illegal. English should have put pressure on Barclay to speak with police. Quite why he didn't is baffling. He should have stepped in when very senior, loyal members of the National Party were resigning from that electorate that he'd held for 18 years. He must have known something was going very wrong there. He should have realised something was wrong with Barclay's leadership. He should have done more, but he didn't. And that takes the gloss off his whiter-than-white reputation. The speed with which the scandal quickly engulfed National will have alarmed him, not least because we're 90-odd days out from an election. And there will be more questions. Why didn't he step in? Why was Barclay protected in the wake of such damning allegations? And why didn't Bill English do more when he knew that Barclay's alleged actions amounted to a crime? Still, nothing from National. Bill English's squeaky clean image has taken a hit, and he can't afford for that to happen again.
So not sure whether Leighton's taking that sort of wider view on the effect on National, or whether he's still sort of worried about Todd Barclay himself. I think he's offering some sort of mentoring course live on air on network radio.
Surely within the National Party, surely within the people who surround a young politician in Parliament, there must have been people who were mentoring him. Now, let's make an assumption for the moment that there weren't. Because I'm damned if I can see any sign of them. Up to and including yesterday. Or the day before, at least. So why not? Why wasn't there? Did nobody care? Is it assumed that once you get elected to Parliament, in an electorate seat, because if you're part of the party, got a party list seat, then everybody gets to know you, but you are selected by the local committee, you are voted for by the locals, and you don't necessarily have to have anything to do with those in power in Wellington. But considering that it was Bill English's old seat, one would have thought there would have been some attachment here as far as mentoring goes. But there's damn all sign of it. And that's a failure of the party, in my opinion. Big time. If he'd had it, chances are that he wouldn't have found himself in the position that he now does. Mind you, it could be that he resisted it. It could be that he thought he was so clever and so good that he didn't want it. I don't know. But just to wrap it up, I'm informed that the family is a very fine family. This has just been passed on to me. Very fine family. And that's he wasn't everybody's choice for the replacement for Bill English, and therefore some repercussions came about. But without the mentoring, he was in trouble.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought Leighton was going to offer to do the mentoring, but it sounds like he wants somebody in National to do it. That's a shame. I thought that would be quite a good service. Right, now, surely that's enough of Todd Barclay for 1 week. Let's talk about Queenstown's drink-driving reputation now.
And what is the trend? The trend indicates, does it, that the drink-drive cases are actually increasing in numbers?
That's correct, yeah. So we got some stats from the ministry, and from 2012 they were 169 and they've gone up to 208 in 2016. And the numbers of that we've put 100 names on the front page today, and they are the 100 people that we know of that have been convicted of drink driving in this town this year. So that's already, it's not even 6 months old.
What reaction have you had?
Generally, it's been two reactions. One is good on you, and the other is how dare you. So very strong reaction.
And what about police? They obviously support this, do they?
Well, I don't really know. There's been no official word from them, but we've worked with them in terms of getting stories leading up for our campaign.
And legally, David, it's all above board, is it? I mean, this is in the public domain anyway. You can do this?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's open justice. And
right.
It's enunciation as the law provides.
So, Liam Collins, as a lawyer, what's your view on this?
Obviously, to be honest, I haven't read the article today and I don't know the stats. I just wonder, and one thing is, drink driving in Queenstown is certainly commented on by the judiciary. A lot of the regular list days are a large percentage of those are drink drive cases. But we live in a lucky town that we don't have a lot of serious crime. Perhaps that is why it sticks out. In terms of drink driving, we've got a lot of people here on low-wage jobs, expensive living costs. They come into one argument is that they can afford to go on the drink, they can afford taxis to go home. But if they live in Kelvin Heights, Arrowtown, Fernhill, Frankton, Jack's Point, a taxi ride is in excess of $80, $100.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's completely acceptable to drink drive in those circumstances, especially if it's going to be over a longer distance than it would be in other places. Not quite sure what the mayor's logic is there. Anyway, let's move on to Amazon finally making its way into Australia. It could put things like JB Hi-Fi and Harvey Norman under threat, apparently, because you can get all their stuff for cheaper online.
Online shopping is here to stay, which is quite true. And
absolutely.
You know, I think bricks and mortar retailers accept that. They understand that. But what does it mean having a giant like Amazon open up shop in Australia?
This is a game changer, and it's a game changer right across Australasia. So they'll use their new base in Sydney as a springboard to the wider area.
And why will it be a game changer for shoppers in this part of the world?
Okay, if we look at the American market, Amazon is 40 cents of every $1 spent online in America. It just shows the strength of their determination to essentially own markets. We've just seen in the last week they've bought Whole Foods Market, which is a really aspirational grocery retailer in the States. So they're determined to own many parts of the retail puzzle. And it will really shake the market up in this part of the world as well.
It must be a worrying time, especially for the retail stores like JB Hi-Fi, Harvey Norman, that buy in bulk and try and use price as their point of difference.
That's right, yes. The large analysts in Australia who focus on the retail market have suggested that Amazon will be around 15% cheaper for many products, and that in itself is a significant lever in winning customers over.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? Because it's nice to still have the shops to go and actually have a look at the products, hold them, maybe try them, and then just leave the shop, not buy them, and then go online and buy them for cheaper. But obviously that doesn't really work for the shop. It's tricky. Recycling tyres, they're pumping it up, if you'll excuse the pun.
I mean, so 3.1 million tyres a year, how many do we have in the country every year?
Well, we think we should be able to, once we hit full capacity, be consuming at least 60% of the tyres that are being used each year. And with a few other initiatives, we think we can probably get it up from that as well. But we're really excited to be co-investing with the government to be able to make good use of what's otherwise a real problem out in landfills and causing problems around the country.
That's right, no question about that. So what can you tell us about the project and this new technology around the kiln?
So, well, it's new technology for New Zealand, but this is actually a pretty tried and true technology globally. So in Europe and the US, there's dozens of these kind of plants that are contributing to fuel into cement plants. And in essence, what it allows us to do is to take chipped tyres, so that's when they've been all chipped up into little pieces, and we can feed them into our furnace, and the rubber in the tyres acts as a fuel, which means we don't need to use as much coal. And as an added bonus, the steel in the tyres actually contributes iron, and we need iron to make the cement. So that also means we don't need to use as much beach sand, which is where we currently get the iron from the West Coast beaches north of Auckland.
So there's the man from Golden Bay Cement telling you all you ever needed to know, and probably slightly more, about what's in a tyre and how they're going to use it. Fascinating. I am Glenn ZB. That has been News Talk ZB for Friday and the week. We will see you back here with the weekend edition on Monday. Don't miss it. You can't really, because it'll just be there for whenever you want it.